Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. And welcome to Nature Mystic with Selena Fox, a podcast where we enjoy encore presentations of topics covered by Circle Sanctuary Senior Minister Selena Fox from her previous podcasts, Circle Craft Studies and Nature Folk. In tonight's encore from 2020, Reverend Selena Fox and Dr. Dennis Carpenter discuss their personal, academic, and professional work, studies, and teaching in the emerging field of eco-psychology.
Welcome to Nature Spiritualist Selena Fox. This is your host, Selena Fox, and tonight I have with me my partner and husband, Dr. Dennis Carpenter. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, and both he and I have been exploring psychology and its many dimensions throughout our professional life. Tonight, we are going to share some thoughts, information, and experiences with eco-psychology. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you, Selena. It's great to be on your show tonight.
What is eco-psychology?
Well, eco-psychology to me combines two things. It combines ecology and psychology. And for me, one of the key elements of that is looking at the human relationship with the rest of the natural world and considering various aspects of that relationship. Over the years, I've been interested in the relationship we have with nature and how that shapes our views about nature and how that in turn shapes our attitudes and behaviors regarding preserving the natural world. I've also been interested in the role that experiences in nature can improve our well-being in general and also help for a deeper spiritual connection with all of nature.
Eco-psychology is what I might call an emerging field in the realm of psychology. Something that Dennis and I have in common is not only have we had psychology as part of our educational and professional experience throughout our adult years, but both of us have had strong connections with the environmental movement. When I was an undergraduate at the College of William & Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia, from 1967 to 1971, I developed my interest in psychology and also became very aware of the need to help protect the environment. I was part of that very first Earth Day back on April 22nd, 1970. So during my junior year, I was one of the many people organizing Earth Day teach-ins at college campuses, more than 2,000 campuses across the United States. For me, my studies of psychology and my studies of environmental science are interwoven. And throughout my life, I see them as very interconnected. As I went to graduate school the second time, back in the early 1990s, we had to come up with a model of counseling. I was studying at that time for my master's in counseling at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. in my own model of counseling and psychotherapy, I not only talk about the importance of humans being in touch and in balance with different dimensions within the human experience, the physical, the body, the mental, cognition, the energetic, our actions, the emotional, feelings and social, but also the spiritual dimension. And as part of looking at spiritual dimensions of psychology, I intertwined my model of counseling and therapy with eco-spirituality and eco-psychology, the importance of not only connecting with that core spirit that's within ourselves, but that interconnection with the larger circle of nature of which we are part here on planet Earth and beyond. One of the things that has excited me over the years is the fact that within psychology, more people have discovered the need to go beyond looking at humans being in good relation within themselves and among each other with the rest of the natural world. And indeed, Dennis and I have been at environmental psychology sessions with the American Psychological Association. Dennis, you've done some research on spiritual experiences in nature as part of you getting your degree. Can you tell us a bit about your own explorations of eco-psychology?
Yes, I've been interested in ecology and nature throughout my entire life. I grew up on a farm in rural Wisconsin, and that was a very organic experience involving a lot of time outside. Over my adult life, I've lived in the country, except for the years that I was in college. I've always lived in fairly remote places in nature. One of the things that attracted me to Circle Sanctuary back in the early 80s was the role that nature played in the spiritual and religious perspectives of contemporary paganism, and the work of Circle Sanctuary as a nature preserve was of interest to me, and I ended up living there and being with Selena, and our lives unfolded out here in the country in southwestern Wisconsin. When I pursued my doctoral degree in psychology at Saybrook University, and at that time was known as Saybrook Institute, located in San Francisco. And my professors there encouraged me to focus on paganism in some way. And so I focused on the nature of spiritual experiences reported by people within the pagan movement, and looked at the relationships between those experiences and their ecological viewpoints, and their the kinds of life changes that evolved out of those experiences. And as I interviewed people about their experiences connecting with the divine or the sacred or that which they would use other terms to describe, people generally reported feeling very profound experiences of interconnectedness with the rest of the natural world. They also reported that they felt, many felt a sense of oneness in that interconnectedness. Some described what we might call mystical experiences in nature. And that's been consistent with what a lot of people have reported over the years when they talk about their church being in nature, for example. And I did find correlations between the reports of those types of experiences and pro-ecological viewpoints, tendencies towards environmental action to benefit the planet as a whole and various ecosystems on our planet Earth, and also relationships between their overall sense of well-being and adjustment in life. So over the years since that time, I've continued to be interested in a couple different hypotheses. The first one is that experiences in nature enhance our sense of reverence for nature. They increase our sense that all of nature is alive and imbued with spiritual energy, that as humans we're profoundly interconnected with all aspects of the rest of the natural world, that we recognize that nature has intrinsic value and deserves to exist in its own right, independent of whatever purposes it might serve for humans. And that stemming from those kinds of experiences and those kinds of beliefs is a heightened tendency to be concerned about environmental issues and to be motivated to take action to preserve the natural world, and in more recent decades, increasing awareness of climate change and motivation to do something about that. The second hypothesis, it has to do with the potential for experiences in nature to enhance our sense of overall well-being. And there's a fairly robust and growing body of research that clearly suggests a relationship between these experiences in nature and the ability for us to kind of refocus our energy, to get our energy and focus back, to relieve stress, to improve overall health and well-being in a general kind of way. So those are two main areas that I've been working on for decades and continue to be interested in, and look forward to sharing more about those ideas here tonight with you.
I have been doing work with individuals, sometimes couples and sometimes small groups, as part of my counseling, psychotherapy, and consultation practice over the years. And one of the things that I've found really helpful has been to encourage people to get out into a natural area as part of them doing some self-care and being very involved in their own healing processes. I sometimes have called that nature therapy. Sometimes it's been a nature experience, a nature communion. During my graduate school year, I had the opportunity to learn about the healthcare delivery system by working at a for-profit secure psychiatric hospital for severely mentally ill people. I was able to get permission to take some of the patients out into the grounds around the hospital as part of treatment. Lo and behold, we found that the very act of being out in the green space helped improve people's conditions. And while this was not part of a clinical trial, it was something that I was doing as part of my supervised training as a psychotherapist at the hospital. It was something that led me to know firsthand that not only does nature communion serve in a spiritual context to help a person with their spiritual well-being, but in terms of being for mental illness, everything ranging from severe depression, anxiety, and schizophrenia, and some other conditions, there seemed to be improvement that came. Now, part of this was being able to be in a different environment, but I think a lot of it was being in the green space. There are beautiful grounds around the hospital itself, rather than staying confined within a building. And well, certainly, I've also had occasion to work with people who aren't having good access to green space where they live. I have been able to use nature imagery with some others. Indeed, in more recent years, as I have been studying international psychology, how psychotherapy forms are emerging around the world, I become aware of doctors and psychotherapists who have been prescribing going into the green for their clients, their patients. In fact, there's something called forest bathing that is starting to become more known in the United States and other parts of the world. I first became aware of that term as it has emerged out of treatment for people who are stressed and with some other mental issues in Japan. Dennis, what can you tell us about therapeutic aspects of nature communion, forest bathing, going into the green?
One of my interests for the last many years has been our relationship with devices, and that has evolved out of my teaching experiences with young people.
This is Selena Fox, and we are having the opportunity to problem solve on some technical issues that happen from time to time. So in a few moments, we will be resuming our work together.
And also then, and we'll talk a little bit more about this once Selena rejoins us, combine this kind of approach with experiences in nature as well to magnify this type of experience.
So we are having the opportunity to converge our different technologies to rejoin our podcast, which is also happening, as well as the video here. So we were talking about devices and the synchronicity of having the technology cut out on us. I had thought it was our rural location. Indeed, we are in a corner of my office in our house in the woods, which is on land that's right next to Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve. And we aren't yet in the 21st century when it comes to technology. We have satellite internet and landline phones that drop calls. And cell sort of works. However, in talking with our engineer, I learned that even in an urban area, yes, David and Jeanette Ewing, who are Circle Sanctuary ministers, who are core to our podcasting team, there in the greater Washington, D.C. metropolitan area with really good cell and internet. So Blog Talk, I think you need to get some repair going on. So we were talking a bit about the importance of nature and therapy. And forest bathing is something that's become a thing amongst a number of people, and not just being in the forest, but being in other types of green spaces. So tell us a bit about that, Dennis. More people are not only having that experience, but it's being studied.
Yes, so forest bathing is a particular approach that is practiced pretty widely in Japan, and I think it's actually required that people go on retreat into the forest in order to rejuvenate from their hectic day-to-day lives. And in fact, before I was talking about my students and their relationship with devices and trying to help them manage devices more, and in over the years and exploring that topic, ran into a fairly robust body of research that utilizes experiences in nature to help us counter the effects of mental cognitive strain and fatigue as a result of being on devices throughout the day. So when we're on devices, it does tax our attentional and cognitive thinking processes. And this is particularly relevant now as increasingly as a part of the reaction to and dealing with the pandemic, we're being asked to do more and more things on our devices. So the amount of time that people are spending on their devices is increasing. In addition, one of the phenomena that happens is when people take breaks from, say, if they're working on their device or spending a sustained period of time doing a particular activity on a device, often a break is switching to a different activity on the device. But the rub there is that you're still using those same kinds of attentional and cognitive processes in focusing on a screen. So the research is called the nature restoration or restorative effect. And what they find is that experiences in nature, even short experiences, rejuvenate our attentional and cognitive focus. So if we take breaks from our screen time and go outside and spend some time in nature, that can be very, very helpful. Interestingly, I recall some studies that even considered differences between different types of screensavers on a device. So, for example, they had, in the study I'm recalling, they had a screensaver that was a view from a rooftop in an urban environment. They just looked out onto the city. And the other screensaver view was a rooftop garden. Same scene, rooftop garden, looking out over the city. And the people who took a break and looked at the rooftop garden in contrast to the view without nature experienced some rejuvenation effect. So that's inspiring, I think, in this present context that we find ourselves in, because I'm sure that some of you are fairly restricted in your ability to get outside and be in nature. So here, for example, there's nobody around, so we can just go walk out into the woods, but that's just not the case in other types of living situations. So, you know, we could create a hierarchy, if you will, of experiences in nature, ranging from those walks outside in the woods to maybe being outside in your yard, if you have a yard, and connecting with the plants and
the natural world around your living space, but perhaps you're in an apartment where you can't get outside. So perhaps plants in your apartment, or artwork in your apartment, or photographs of nature scenes, or, you know, not the most ideal potentially for getting a break from a computer screen, but perhaps images of nature on our devices. All can be helpful because it seems like as humans we've, in our long evolutionary history, had this profound interconnected, interdependent relationship with nature. And so there almost seems to be something biologically priming within us to gain benefit from experiences in nature. And I'm wondering if you want to add something at this point, Selena.
Yeah, I have found that I am able to guide nature journeys through meditation and contemplation. Sometimes it is working with a client and having them call up a place that's special to them in nature and that they've had really positive associations with. And I think of one client, it's the seashore, really enjoying walking along the shore and hearing the sound of the ocean. So if that is a therapeutic image from the past, it can be a therapeutic image for the present by calling the memories of that to mind and then having a person taking an imagination journey into that environment. For another client, it has been a woodland experience, literally going into the forest. Out in California, there are the sequoias and the redwoods and these huge old trees and being able to connect with that type of forest environment. For others, they may be connected with a hardwood forest, such as we have here around Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve in our home, which is next door. We're in a hardwood forest, a mostly oak forest, or it could be a pine forest. For still others, they enjoy some type of meadow or prairie. And there's a variety of different ecosystems that are around on planet Earth, and humans have different relationships with those ecosystems depending on their own life journey, where they were born, where they grew up, where they dwell now, where they vacation. I think the important thing is in guiding nature imagery journeys is to come up with a journey, destination, and process that's meaningful for the person taking the journey. Ideally, a place that a person has already had some type of positive association with, either by actually visiting a kind of environment that we'd be using, or really enjoying learning about it through education, through art and music. In addition, I've found that being able to have some symbol of nature on a personal altar as a reminder of that connection with the larger world of which we are a part. Certainly creating a home altar, and as one takes some journeys into nature, and depending on where those journeys are, actual physical journeys, one may be able to bring back a bit of earth, a stone, a shell, perhaps a plant if it's either one's garden or a park where being able to gather plants is an option. Having some type of focal point in one's home space with natural objects can also be another way of connecting with nature and calling to mind positive, renewing, healing, wellness experiences with an environmental dimension. I think, too, being able to do spiritual practice that's rooted in nature, being able to not only commune with beautiful places, renewing places as part of visits and imagination, but I'm doing rituals there to, it can be as simple as sitting and becoming one with the place, or taking an observant nature walk and tuning in to the sounds, the sights, the smells, the feelings, the impressions of a place. Not only do I see earth-centered nature therapy as helpful for many people, but one of my favorite exercises to recommend with clients, especially those who are feeling totally enmeshed and snarled in day-to-day musings over problems and conflicts and stresses, anxieties, is to go out in the evening, or if going outside is not an option, going to space.com or some other site where you can gaze at the heavens. For nature is not only that wonderful community of life that is here on planet Earth, the biosphere. Nature, capital N nature, is something that is throughout the universe. Being able to get a good view of the night sky, and obviously this works best if you can get to a place where you can see stars and the moon if it's out, and be able to contemplate that. And even if there's some light pollution in an urban area, chances are on a full moon night with a clear sky, you're going to see that moon. And at dark moon, chances are you will see some stars and planets. Gaze at the beauty of the night sky. Experience yourself being part of that wonderful cosmic scene. It's amazing in so doing. Stargazing for even 5 or 10 minutes helps shift one's awareness from ego-centric, person-centric, problem-centric, to eco-centric, being focused on being part of the larger cosmos. It doesn't mean that your problems vanish, but it's an intervention that you do to break the pattern of being stuck with the stresses, of concerns, of fears, of sadness. It gives your mind a break. It's similar to what you've talked about, Dennis, with taking a break from screen time, going out. And you don't even have to physically go out. Being able to look out a window can be another way of communing with that larger environment of which we are a part. I think it's more than just looking out a window or walking around the block. It's allowing yourself to be mindful, to be aware, to experience yourself as part of that community of life that you are looking at, that you're communing with, that you're moving through. What are some examples of meditations and practices that you've found helpful for yourself or in working with others, Dennis?
So I'd like to add to what Selena's talked about with regard to how we approach these experiences in nature. So I know for myself, sometimes I'm taking a walk and my brain is working in overtime on whatever it was that I was dealing with at my computer or in my office prior to taking that walk. And yes, that's a potential value in terms of thinking things through. But the kind of experience in nature that seems to be most associated with the rejuvenating, healing kinds of effects is one where we are mindful. And so let's unpack that for a little bit. You know, you're probably familiar with some types of methods for relaxation, such as deep breathing exercises and perhaps visualization. Selena's alluded to those kinds of approaches in what she's just talked about. But what we want to strive for is that as we are outside or as we're doing our encounter with nature, that we're doing it in a fairly passive, attentive kind of way, meaning that we want to stop that internal chatter of our mind. So in terms of mindfulness practice, where we work to not allow our mind to go into a particular web of thoughts or ideas or problems or whatever it might be, but to continue to work to bring that focus back to, say, our breathing. So as we're walking or being in nature in some way, it is that passive type of appreciation of nature where it's not requiring a lot of effort. It's a, that's where I'm using the term passive, is there's not a lot of effort involved, and there's not a lot of cognition involved. We're not analyzing nature. We're not evaluating whether one thing is prettier than another, but rather we're simply paying attention to the sensory experiences of nature in a very calm, relaxed, and again, passive or effortless kind of way. So we might just appreciate the beauty of nature, the colors, the textures, perhaps the sounds that we're hearing as we're in that experience with nature. What are the bodily sensations and feelings are, perhaps the breezes touching our face, that sort of thing, the smells, the taste. So we're engaging sensorially in appreciating and marveling at the wonder of nature rather than analyzing and evaluating it. In addition, the kinds of nature experiences that are most helpful are ones that are meaningful to us, that we find appealing in some kind of way. So when Selena talked about walking on a seashore, through the woods, or in an open meadow, or in a prairie, that sort of thing, again, we all have those individual differences of the kinds of settings that are going to have this more relaxing and rejuvenating effect. So maybe it's being by water or being in the woods, whatever that might be. And the extent to which then those experiences in nature can be a at least brief getaway for us. So if we're out in that corner of our yard, or if we're sitting looking out the window at a tree, or that we're focusing on nature in some other kind of way, that's a break for us, that that's a change in our routine, that it represents a chance for us to get away, if only temporarily, and encounter nature, and then come back from that experience in a refreshed and rejuvenated kind of way. Now, obviously, the amount of time we have available to be in nature could be a factor. The extent to which we're able to get away and not have other people around. So these forest bathing experiences that you described are typically, I think, longer periods of time, maybe up to a week, where people are kind of like we do here in the United States, go to a park or go somewhere and be there for a while. Some people find wilderness experiences helpful, so there are companies that organize wilderness adventures, and so getting really away from things out into wilderness kinds of areas are helpful for some people. So we could look at the nature of those experiences in terms of their duration, their intensity, their uniqueness. All these kinds of factors could potentially play a role.
And I think many people already are doing some form of nature therapy without realizing it. Going on vacation to particular places and feeling called to certain environments. A way to deepen the therapeutic value of that is to take time to just be still there, to be quiet there, and to attune to the spirit of place. Another form of nature therapy that I have worked with myself and with clients over the years is tree communion, to actually experience a human connection with another life form, to find a tree, to connect with that tree, and in a way that works with one's own worldview and spiritual orientation, to honor or put forth a thought to the tree, respecting it as another being. And then, if you get a sense it's appropriate to do so through this interaction, to touch the tree. It could be putting your back up along the trunk or putting your hand on the trunk, holding a branch. Yes, even tree hugging can work, where you make some kind of physical contact with the tree, and as you do so, you allow yourself to be one with that living being, to merge with the tree, to shift from human consciousness to tree consciousness in your own kind of human way, to become one, to experience yourself being part of that living being, rooted in the earth, branches to the sky. It's a sunny day, feeling the sunlight coming down through leaves and branches into your being, moisture from the earth, the nutrients of the earth coming up through the roots, the wind, the air around. Indeed, popular meditation over the years and a number of nature spirituality rituals is some form of tree meditation in which one transforms one's own awareness to being a tree, rooted in the earth as well as connected with the sky, and then balancing planet and heaven within one's own being. So there's a variety of different ways of doing nature meditations that can be therapeutic. Perhaps you really enjoy flowers, and you can spend time with a particular flower, looking at it, communing with it, smelling it, becoming one with it, experiencing yourself being in bloom. Or you might find yourself really enjoying some type of water meditation. We have a wetland at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, and one of my favorite things to do, not only personally, but in times when we can gather, to have people go with me and experience the chorus of spring peepers in the wetlands. And it is amazing hearing those sounds of so many creatures, a kind of nature music, and to just be part of the audience, part of the scene where these wonderful sounds are coming from the wetland, and then going the next level of just being one with that wetland ecosystem and the creatures, the spring peepers, making their sounds. Each of the elements can be a focus for a therapeutic nature meditation. With soil, perhaps you like gardening or working with houseplants, the very act of moving your hands in the soil can be quite a wonderful way to commune with the element first, and can be quite centering. Or holding a rock, feeling the power of the earth element centering you. Being out on a day where you can feel a gentle breeze, or perhaps you enjoy the invigoration of a strong wind, experiencing yourself being one with the wind, holding your hands up, experiencing the wind across your whole body, breathing in, becoming one with the element air, burning some incense, and watching how the incense moves through the air, taking in the aroma of incense. For a fire meditation, it could be the fire of the sun, experiencing the warmth of sun rays upon you, or kindling a candle, or a hearth fire, or a bonfire, and communing with the flames, experiencing the energetic power of fire, and water, still water, a pond, or a bowl of water, moving water, having two chalices, pouring water from one into the other, being by a stream, a river, experiencing the flow of water in motion, being by the ocean, watching the waves, hearing the waves. One of my favorite things to do is to be on a shoreline as the tide is coming in, and being in that in-between world between the sand and the water, calling to the ocean as a divine being, honoring the ocean. I usually call to the ocean as Ocean Mother, but I also have worked with ocean as Ocean Father and as Ocean Spirit. The fifth element, Spirit, is the interconnectedness within all of nature. And I do see that us having as part of our worldview an understanding of ourselves being part of the larger biosphere that is life here on planet Earth, and that larger circle of nature of which we are all part, not only here on this planet, in this solar system, in the Milky Way galaxy, but within the whole universe, is another powerful way of evolving your identity, evolving your way of working with nature, and yes, indeed, deepening your spiritual understanding of the magic and mystery of nature. So Dennis, as you think about interconnection, I've worked with that as part of my way of meditation and nature communion. I want to say a few words about interconnection and your own way of having that as part of your worldview, and perhaps some of the worldviews you have heard about as you have interviewed other people and have talked about this in workshops.
So that experience of interconnectedness, Selena's made many different types of comments here about that, but when I, and all of them are relevant, I think I would add the fact that it does involve kind of a dissolving of the normal type of ego boundaries that we're used to functioning within as humans. So in these experiences in nature, in my own experience and in the experience of people that I've talked to, it's in that quiet, passive type of encounter with nature that it's like the boundaries between you and the rest of the natural world kind of dissolve. And you feel a really profound sense that you are intimately connected with the rest of the natural world. And some individuals also report that a sense of oneness in that they feel that kind of unifying kind of a principle where we're all of the same energy and that we're all part of this interconnected web of life here on planet Earth. So that's the experience of interconnectedness. And we've talked about a lot of different ways here this evening of connecting with nature. The most important part is to be in nature, to increase the amount of time that you're spending in nature. Don't judge or evaluate whether you're doing it right or not. The most important part is to approach it in a non-judgmental kind of way and to be with nature. And also my hope for you is that as you move through life's journey and connect with nature in these profound kinds of ways, that it also further inspires you to be concerned about the changes that are happening to our planet and to be more motivated to help others understand the challenges that we face, to help others understand their profound interconnections with the rest of the natural world, so that we all may be motivated to take more action to help counter the effects of climate change and to reverse some of the processes that seem to be unfolding.
I do think it is important to not only celebrate nature in natural areas, if you're able to do that, or through imagination and envisioning, but to recognize that humankind needs to evolve and be more responsible, not only working with other humans in a better way, but working with the whole natural world that we're part of here on planet Earth. So I do think that as we celebrate Earth Day 2020, we not only need to find ways to deepen our personal connection with the natural world, but we need to find ways of working with other humans to clean up the pollution and be part of the solution. We need to think globally challenging times for humankind. We are still in the midst of it as we do this podcast leading up to the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. I think something good coming out of these challenging times, humankind around the world all are dealing with the pandemic in some way. And while there are outbreaks in different parts and in different intensities, humankind is at risk from this virus. This is giving us an opportunity to think globally. This is giving us an opportunity to act locally, not only to keep ourselves safe, but to keep other humans safe, to find ways to summon kindness, altruism, love, cooperation, and other positive values that are part of the human experience, to work with that in our own lives, connecting us with other humans, cooperation, collaboration, to work not only for greater health for humankind, but for the planet as a whole. So as we go into Earth Day 2020, call to mind some of the slogans that have been part of Earth Day celebrations over the past 50 years. Yes, think globally, act locally. Earth Day, every day. Taking the environmental awareness that is heightened in connection with Earth Day observances every year, letting it expand, be shared, and be part of the planet throughout the year. Together, we can make a difference. Individually, we can make a difference, not only by living more sustainably in our personal lives, but collaborating with other humans on solutions to get rid of the pollution. So, in closing, I wish you a wonderful Earth Day. I give thanks to my husband and partner, Dr. Dennis Carpenter, for being part of this special Earth Day podcast on eco-psychology tonight.
Happy Earth Day, everybody.
Happy Earth Day. So mote it be. And now I invite you to learn more about Earth Day and to connect with resources for celebrating Earth Day. At the Circle Sanctuary website, you will see information on our Earth Day celebration page, not only about this year's Earth Day 2020 celebration, there's a schedule there, but there's a link to the Circle Sanctuary Community Facebook page where we will be having our Earth Day celebration online on Saturday, April 18th. On that same page, you will see links to a variety of resources that you may find helpful in your own Earth Day observances. I have my Earth Day prayer for planetary wellness. I first birthed that at the 1990 celebration of Earth Day. That was the year, the 20th anniversary of Earth Day, when Earth Day went global. And I have done some revisions of that over the years, so you will be able to connect with one of the latest versions there. I also have some chants and a ritual, some articles, and links to a variety of podcasts in the resources page called Nature Pathways. Another place where I invite you to do Earth Day celebrations is right here on CSNP. Not only next Wednesday night, Earth Day 2020, the 50th anniversary, April 22nd, I'll be doing a special podcast, but on Nature Mystic, my other weekly podcast, on the 19th of April, I will have an encore of an Earth Day ceremony that I have done. And all this month, there's a variety of Earth Day podcasts on both my Nature Mystic show, which happens every Sunday at 6 p.m. Central Daylight Time, and every Wednesday, which is at 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time. You can get more information about Circle Sanctuary, our Nature Spirituality Church, and its environmental work at the Circle Sanctuary website, www.circlesanctuary.org. Be sure to connect with CSNP, the CSN podcast page on Facebook. Like and follow our page on Facebook to get updates about the various podcasts, not only about Earth Day and environmental issues, but various ceremonies and interviews, discussions, and meditations that we have throughout all six podcasts that we have on our network every month. For more information about the work that I'm doing, you can connect with me on social media, Selena Fox Update, Twitter, Selena_Fox, Instagram, Selena Fox, and now on YouTube as well, Selena Fox. And Circle Sanctuary also has presence on all those platforms. So thank you so much for tuning in to our eco-spirituality, eco-psychology, Earth Day podcast. And we wish you a wonderful Earth Day, and may we work together to bring about a healthier planet now and in times to come. So be it.
Bless your blue green ocean, bless your red blue sky, your streams and your valleys, your mountains so high. Bless your gods and goddesses, Buddha, Sikh, and Jay. Jesus, Allah, Yahweh, we praise your many names. Speak a thousand languages, we speak with the same tongue. Bless our planet, a new one sky, all the people on it, we all laugh and we all cry. Oh, bless our planet, place of our birth. We are all one family, we are children of the earth. Bless your vibrant cities, bless your sacred ground, your hillsides and your forests, and bless your tiny town. Bless the winged ones that fly, bless the horse and bear, elephants, the dolphin, the cricket and the hare. We speak a thousand languages, we speak with the same tongue. Bless our planet, under one sky, all the people on it, we all laugh and we all cry. Oh, bless our planet, place of our birth. We are all one family, we are children of the earth. Bless our planet, under one sky, all the people on it, we all laugh and we all cry. Oh, bless our planet, place of our birth. We are all one family. We are children of the earth. We are all one family. We are children of the earth.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.